backbone research network called GIANT, if you have heard of it. GIANT is now stepping into GIANT 2. It's been a year since we started migrating. Dante has been involved with the EGE project, apart from the GIANT 2 projects as well. So two of my talks are about the projects. The first one is about EGEE, and the second one is about GIANT 2 JRA 1. Both these projects deal with measurement data exchange in terms of actual values instead of having a representation. So we are building frameworks which allow exchange of data, measurement data, and anybody who has authorization can actually access this data. So one such client is EGEE, and I'll introduce what EGEE does and what its activity does and what it has done so far. EGEE is actually a GRID project. The GRID community project, which started 2 years, almost 2 years back, April 2004, actually. My talk is scheduled is that the first part will be some introductions. Basically, I'll tell you what EGEE is about, EGEE JRF4, which is what deals with network measurements. And then a bit of GGF NMWG, which stands for Global Grid Forum. I'll also talk about the works of EGEE JRF4. There's a small demo of a diagnostic tool which has been done by EGEE, a roadmap and conclusions. So a quick introduction to EGEE. EGEE stands for Enabling Grids for E-Science. It's a two-year project, started in April 2004. It's very likely to continue to EGEE 2 from April 2006 onwards. There are many activities within EGEE, networking activities, 5 of them, 2 service activities, and 4 joint research activities. The one that we are interested in is EGEE JRA4, which deals with network services development. So within this network services development, what we are doing is that we have decided to provide to work on 2 services. One is the network performance monitoring, which is called the NPM, and the second one is bandwidth allocation reservation, which is called the BAR. The scope of this presentation is for NPM, because that's of more importance for this working group. The partners in this project were the University of Edinburgh, which replaced UCL, Dante, CNRS from France, GAR, and DFN. So an introduction to what EGEE JRA4 works on, that's the NPM part. The main purpose is to standardize access to network measurement data. And this network measurement data is available from different domains, and each domain can have a different kind of framework. By framework, we mean a measurement system. So backbones can have their own frameworks, and they provide network measurement data. End-to-end measurements have their own frameworks. And to gather all this data, we make use of XML, basically web services. And the XML specifications are being worked on by GGF NMWG, which stands for Global Grid Forum Network Measurements Working Group. I'll introduce GGF NMWG in the next slide, but just let's continue with what EGEE JRA4 has been doing. It has studied metrics of interest to the grid. And by grid, we mean the grid middleware, the GOC, which is called Grid Operation Center, and the ROC, which is called the Regional Operation Center. So all these entities or the users are going to use network measurement data in one way or the other. So what EGEE JRA4 has done is try to find out what are the metrics of interest. And it has done a preliminary requirements capture for the diagnostic tool which has been built so far, and for the EGEE middleware interface as well. So just to introduce the Global Grid Forum, because we're going to use it quite often. Global Grid Forum is actually a forum wherein all grid community people have working groups and discuss ideas and things like that. It's just on the forum. There's a very active participation in the network measurements working group by a very heterogeneous crowd. We have people from Internet2, ESNet, Dante, Dalsbury Laboratories and many people in the Enron community as well. The works include two versions of XML schema so far over a span of 2 years. The first version has been used for quite a long time by the EGE, and the second version is on the drawing board. Also, categorization of network metrics, basically the name, all the network metrics available. Version 2 of XML schema is still work in progress. If you're interested, there's a mailing group which you can subscribe to. EGE is related to GGF and MWG, in which because they are the early adopters of GGF and MWG work, there are no other schemas available which allow exchange of measurement data. GGF and MWG is the only provider. EGE also provides feedback to NMWG about these schemas and also uses both versions of XML schemas. So the work that we have done in NPM is we have produced three prototypes. The first prototype, which was in December 2004, retrieved data from end-to-end monitoring tools, which we call as E2E Monit, and also from Dante's homegrown Perf Monit, which was using one-way delay data from the ripe TTM boxes. We used around five ripe TTM boxes, Switch, Giant, Uninet, and HiaNet boxes. And this was the first time that GGF and MWG schemas were used, and we gained a lot of experience in implementing web services. The prototype 2 continued to do this, but added a lot of security in terms of certificates and secure socket layers, and also some enhancements and demonstrations for NMWG by giving them feedback and so on. The third one, which is the most recent one and which is actually quite an improvement over the last two, is the diagnostic tool, which was completed last September. It provides access to measurement data via GUI. So you'll see that GUI in the next demonstration. This diagnostic tool has the capability to communicate with a framework called PerfSonar. PerfSonar is the work done by GN2 JRA1. I will introduce PerfSonar and say a bit about PerfSonar in the next presentation. But let's just assume that PerfSonar is a framework, and PerfSonar has the capability to provide capacity, available bandwidth, and utilization. All these are measurements made at layer 3. And the diagnostic tool has the capability to retrieve data from Giant, from Abilene, and ESNet. ESNet stands for ESNet is the network of U.S. Department of Energy. Abilene is the equivalent of Giant in U.S., and Giant, of course, is our network. A new thing which was used here was a discovery service to discover which of these frameworks actually give data and what data they give and so on. And continuation of using certificates and access control list to see who can access data and who cannot. The figure to the right is the brief architecture, a very high-level architecture of what the EGE stuff looks like. You can see that there are two clients, Publisher and DT. Of course, there can be more. Then there is the NPM services. It contains the mediator, the discovery service. We also have the translation layer. I will explain why we need the translation layer soon. Then we have the frameworks. I have shown three instances of the frameworks. Basically, the translation layer translates from one version of NMWG into another, because the frameworks that we are talking about have decided to adopt the second version of GGF and NMWG schemas. So a translation layer, which by itself is a web service, is being used to be able to talk to these frameworks, because whole of EGE is still using an NMWG version 1. So that's the architecture. I'll go into the presentation, into the tool now. Let's say that this is a bit right. Okay. It's probably not the best resolution, but I don't want to waste any more time trying to fix the resolution. So I'll try to show you the data with this resolution itself. This is the diagnostic tool. It it is a bit more bigger, and it's a web page, it's a JSP, it is HTTP over HTTPS, so it's secure socket layer. So in this diagnostic tool, I can say that I want to choose end paths, a set time range, and see the end paths. So the end paths provided here are interfaces on Xi'an network and the Internet 2 network and the ESNet network. I will choose, let's say, SurfNet. Okay. I have to do that before I could do that. You can see that there are so many interfaces available for the end user to query upon. Well, I'll choose any other one. So ULACBIM, which is Israel's network, I think. Sorry?
Turkey.
Let's add this path. If I say find data, it then says which data I want. I can choose the metric. Let's say utilization. And it actually pressed the enter button by clicking here. But this is the data. Oh, sorry. Got it from the cache. Multiple scroll here. It would have probably been a better idea to improve the resolution. Right. Let's say it shows utilization. Then we decided to better set the resolution. Right, probably better. Right, so if I edit the test path, then I say find data. Set for utilization. Then it asks me which statistic I'm interested in. Then I do a set of that. Then I ask for data. And it's gone and queried the web service on the Xi'an site and got the data from ULACBIM into the Xi'an interface. So this is for the Xi'an web service, and we can do the similar ones for Internet 2 and ESNet. Just choose from the list. It's not visible to the user whether it's Internet 2 or ESNet, but as interfaces. So he can pick this up from traceroute by doing a host and find data. Moving back to our presentation. So the roadmap for EGE is that until March 2006, it's going to work on interfaces with the middleware. Now that it's worked on the interfaces with the frameworks, it has to make this data available into the middleware. So the work is now on the middleware part. It will also do further requirements capture to see which other metric will be of interest to the operational centers. It is going to work on the end-to-end monitoring part, a bit of hardening and pilot deployment. And access list has some issues, so it's going to move towards the virtual organization membership service, which is the WOMS. EGE2, which starts from April 2006 onwards, has current plans of making this a service and providing this data to the grid middleware and the operation centers. It will use deployments made in EGE1 and also will develop on the diagnostic tool further. Basically, the conclusion is that RIPE TTM data, which we used, was useful for development of EGE NPM prototypes. EGE aims to provide a variety of data from heterogeneous frameworks, and data disclosure policies need to be set up, and whatever is agreed upon will be upheld. Any questions? Okay. Right, the Personar project. The slides also include some requests from the Personar team for TTM enhancements. The Personar project is also the GIAN2 JRA1 project, a part of the GIAN2 JRA1 project. We'll talk about that in the next slides. An overview of what I'm going to talk is an introduction to what GIAN2 is, what GIAN2 JRA1 is, and a brief discussion on the Personar work, a roadmap to Personar's work, the use of RIPE TTM so far, some requests for enhancements, some thoughts on integrating RIPE TTMs with the Personar work, and some conclusions. GIAN2 is the seventh generation of multi-gigabit pan-European research and education network. It has project partners which include 30 of Europeans, Endrens and Dante and Terina. It includes 5 joint research activities, JRA1 to JRA5, 4 service activities and 7 networking activities. The one that we are going to discuss about is the joint research activity 1, which is GIAN2 JRA1. GIAN2 JRA1 has the goal to provide performance measurement data from different networks to users. Users are of different types. We do this because this helps in locating problems on an end-to-end path. It also aids in understanding network characteristics because more data is available along an end-to-end path. We also want to increase the type of metrics being measured and presented to the user, and if we also want to use more tools, and if new tools are available that suit our requirements, we are going to develop them. So we want to use these tools so that we can collect and process network data from different networks. The main activity within GIAN2 JRA1 is Personar, which is a framework to facilitate exchange of measurement data. The partners in JRA1 are, as you've seen, lots of them, Arnes, Bellnet, Carnet, Dante, so on. The Personar, the framework part, has specific partners who are ESNet, Internet2, and University of Delaware. So going to Personar, we are using a different approach in Personar. This approach is called the SOA, which stands for Service-Oriented Architecture. SOA is like a collection of one or more services. A service, in this case, is a well-defined and an independent entity. You can bring up a service and be able to talk to it, locate it, and it has a particular list of tasks that it can do. You can use a service singularly or in conjunction with other services to accomplish any particular task. In Personar, SOA is at the heart of Personar. We have 5 base services and 3 additional services. The architecture the inspiration for the architecture is that all measurement systems contain a combination of measurement tools, data storage, security and policy implementation, topology information in one format or the other, and some visualization. Based on this, we have identified services, and we have also added some because we have more requirements in terms of service discovery, resource protection, and data formatting. So the services that we have identified are the base services, which are four, and three additional services. The base services, as the names are quite explanatory, actually. The measurement archive stands for a database which is made a service. A measurement point is a tool which is capable of making a measurement. It's made into a service, authentication service, a lookup service, and so on. So mapping the ingredients into the services, you can see that measurement tools become the measurement point service, the data storage becomes the measurement archive service, security and policy go into the authentication service. Now that you have all these services, you want to do some lookup. So you want to find out what services are, what are their capabilities, and so on. So we have a lookup service. And we protect resources. When you have measurement points, you would want to protect resources. So we have the resource protection service. And finally, we have the topology service to provide all the topology information about the networks. So we can have one or more of these services within one domain, if you want to see it that way. And all of these services have common rules. Like, for example, all services advertise themselves into a lookup service. Each service has local policies for authorization and resource protection. And also, usage of services in a multiple domains. If you want to think about these services in a multi-domain scenario, because you're exchanging measurement data, there are multiple lookup services which pair with each other, and information from other lookup services are available. You also have an authentication service to control policy and policy implementation in a domain. You can have one per domain. So there is a small animation over here which demonstrates how these services interact. I have taken two use cases. One use case is retrieval of data. The second use case is actually making a measurement. So let's just consider a domain, and let's say that we have two measurement point services. Like, for example, these measurement point services are for each TTM, right, TTM boxes, okay? Let's say that we have a lookup service in this domain and a measurement archive service which stores all the data in the domain. Then we need an authentication service which takes care of all the policy. So here comes the client. So before the client comes in, sorry, all these services have to register themselves with the lookup service because the lookup service needs to know that these services exist. Then a client comes into the picture who wants to get data. Goes to the lookup service directly, gets information about who has that data. So he basically says, I'm interested in one-way delay data, okay, from this source into this destination. Who can give me this data? And the lookup service says, here is a measurement archive which can actually give you this data. So the client then makes a request to the measurement archive directly. And the measurement archive, before it satisfies the request, make sure that the client is authenticated. So the client can, in one option, provide his credentials to the measurement archive, which then delegates it and makes sure that the client is authenticated. If not, it says no. If yes, it continues. Then it gives back the data. So this was the use case for a measurement data retrieval. Now, the advantage is that there is no single entity which does everything, but rather disparate entities which can be contacted separately. If the client wants to make a measurement, it does the same, contacts two MPs, which then makes sure that the client is authenticated and everything is okay with the client. This is a very simplistic scenario, so we don't have any resource protection as such. But you can imagine that there will be a resource protection service just to make sure that resources are available for a measurement that the client is requesting. And once all the criteria are satisfied, the measurement points actually make a measurement between themselves. Then they have to report the data back. They can give the data back to the client and also to a measurement archive. So the data goes back to the client if the client requests for it, or it can be dumped into a measurement archive, which can be queried later on by the client. So this was the architecture in terms of two use cases. So what we have here is that all the services are independent, and we don't have one big entity. So if there are organizations interested in providing just one of these services, they don't really have to implement a big monolithic system, but rather just one service, and they can export most of their data through it. The current status of PostSonar, now that we have shown so much of architecture, is that there are measurement archives available for round-robin database. These round-robin databases store utilization data and also provide capacity information. They have been deployed by Giant, Internet2, and ESNet. Other deployments are available as well, but they're not presenting data in the clear. There are clients like EGE and DFN CNM. That's a visualization tool which DFN is working on for their DFN IPPM measurement system. So the DFN CNM has been extended to use this data as well. A lookup service is also available. It uses an XML database, and right now the data is static. So basically, all the advertisements that the services do to the lookup service haven't been fixed in yet. The technologies that we have used is web services, basically SOAP, Java, Access, which provides web service capabilities, RRD tools, and Exist databases. The work that we want to do in PerfSonar is that by end of 2005, we want to implement measurement point services for SNMP. This is almost complete. We want to do the same for DFN IPPM and BWCTL, which is the daemon over IPERF. A measurement archive service for DFN IPPM is also planned for end of 2005. More visualizations, basically from CNM and path-based visualizations. Some refinements will be brought about to the existing services to improve their efficiency. And 2006 and beyond, we have a lot more services in the pipeline. Some authentication service, which we have a whole activity in Giant2, which is called the JRA5, which is working on authorization on roaming. And we also have the topology service, wherein the network store their topology information. Some of passive monitoring integration, network equipment information, and all these tools will also be integrated. So this is just the highlights. We have more content coming in as well. And about RIPE TTM boxes. We have used RIPE TTM boxes for almost 2 years now. We got the first account more than 2 years back. And we have been retrieving data from RIPE TTM boxes directly because we wanted the most recent measurements made by RIPE TTM. And to do that, we had to go into the box. Basically, we had two options. One was to Telnet. The other one was to SSH. The Telnet option, we had to keep one session per TTM box, open at all times. And we also found that the session times out at times. And because of this, measurements were missed. So we could not really use Telnet in a system like what we are building. The SSH, the files are big, and copy times were found to be very long. And also the TTM working group has indicated that they have administrative difficulties in managing so many accounts that we requested. So basically what we want is that we want to be able to access data directly, the most recent data. And we mean many Endrens who have expressed interest in doing so. Giant, Switch, HCNet, Nordinet, GRNet, Cessnet. Many of them were part of the EGE demonstrations for prototypes. And the highest priority that we have is to access data in an efficient way, the most recent measurements and raw data. The priority two would be to have the OAMP protocol implemented within the RIPE TTM as well. We have also thought about integrating RIPE TTM with the PerfSonar. Some thoughts are that measurement archive service could be made on TTM boxes. measurement point services on TTM boxes. You can have one per box or one for all boxes. And also measurement archive service for the Drive TTM central database. Resource management will have to be thought about, and authentication and authorization issues will have to be thought about as well. But these are thoughts, and if interested, we can pursue on these and see how things fit within the working group's ideas. So the conclusions. Drive TTM measurements were very useful, and they are very useful as well. We have so many Drive boxes, and we want to access the measurements which are being made by these boxes. They can increase the usage of one-way delay data and network analysis. Projects like EGE can have access to a greater variety of data. Interoperability by implementation of OAM protocols can make one-way delay measurements ubiquitous, because right now they are not so easily available for all the networks. Well, if you have more data, then it's very likely that the usage will be more as well. And if the best scenario would be to integrate it with both sonar, it will be beneficial, we think, to all parties. There are some references on both slides if you're interested in going through the project. Any questions?
Andrei Rybachevsky, RIPE NCC. Maybe I missed this in your presentation, but how exactly TTM data was used for TTM measurements?
TTM measurements were when PerfMonet was the one which started using TTM measurements. What we wanted to do was to expose TTM data in terms of raw data. And we started doing this thing that one-way delay data has to be more used. You know, we actually were interested in using one-way delay data more. Then came EGE along, and they were very much interested in gathering data from the backbone network. So what they did was they started accessing PerfMonet, and all that PerfMonet could give was one-way delay data. Now, the actual usage of EGE data, like, for example, EGE collected one-way delay data, EGE collects available bandwidth data, capacity data, and so on, is still being refined. EGE is still gathering what data will be used by the grid middleware, what data will be used by the operation center, and so on. Basically, most of this data is for analysis, is for solving problems when there are outages. This is one of the use cases. So as of yet, the use case that Drive TTM provided was that one-way delay data could be given via standard interfaces into projects like EGE and so on. And what we expect in the future is that this data will be used for statistical analysis, and the grid middleware will also start using one-way delay data.
All right. So if I understood you correctly, the principle was the more data, the better, and you don't have, like, real applications that will use this data yet. This has been refined, as you said.
Yes, this has been refined, as we say.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions, let's thank the speaker.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's see. Yeah. So next on the agenda is the consumer broadband measurements draft. Let's see. This was posted to the list this afternoon, and basically I discovered this morning that Alex, who was supposed to be presenting it, had not sent any slides but did want it on the agenda. So I put them together. Should also note that Alex wrote the proposal. I read it, but I'm not responsible for the content. So Any tomato should be aimed at Alex and not at me. So what's the background of this thing? It started at Drive 50. Neil O'Reilly gave a presentation on monitoring between his network and end users. That triggered discussion in the working group, and the question was raised whether the working group should pick this up. In parallel at Drive 50, we had a meeting on how should DTM or measurements in the NCC in general evolve in the long run. We had a quite interesting discussion there. Outcome was that one of the things that we could potentially look at as a working group was consumer broadband monitoring. And the question was then how to proceed. And Alex got as far as collecting names of a bunch of people, seven of them, four from large providers, a consultant active in this area, somebody actually doing some development work, and of course himself. And what he has been doing over the last couple of months is write a proposal for a project carried out by the RIPE NCC and supervised by this working group. This proposal, okay, the reality changed after I wrote the slide. It has been distributed on the mailing list and put in the famous RIPE policy development process. And this is an initial draft. It's basically aimed to start the discussion. Far from being finished, but okay, that's what you have with the first draft. So, draft is four pages, and if you summarize it on one slide, you end up with something like this. Ideas to do measurements where you install a device at end user homes. It should be something cheap, easy to deploy, little maintenance, so similar to what Rickard showed earlier, something an end user can just take off the shelf, plug in, and has it running. And this box can then measure between the end box. Then the angle into TTM is that you have these nice measurement points all over the place. So you measure from the end user to the test box at an ISP. And once you have that point, you have the point inside, well, an established point inside an ISP's network. From there on, you can measure to test boxes at other ISPs. First things is to do a proof of concept. There has been work out on this area. We saw Richard talk. There's an Italian group. There's a group elsewhere in the Netherlands. People have been doing these things. On the other hand, if you read through it, there's still a bunch of questions you can raise. Are these accurate measurements? Is the network, is the device stable enough to do it? If you see a result, what does the result mean? Also, if you want to offer this as a service, you probably have all kinds of issues like, okay, how do you manage, where do you collect the data? All these home devices have very little memory. It's not just, I mean, you cannot store gigabytes of the data on them. Deployment, maintenance, all these issues have to be looked at. And as a first step, the proposal is basically do a proof of concept that you can do these measurements and get some overview of all the issues related to offering it. That's a couple of months of work. Basically, Alex hopes that this can be done before RIPE 52 in Istanbul next year. And at that point, there will be some sort of decision point and a discussion on how to proceed. Is this actually a useful device? Is this something the RIPE NCC should be doing? Whatever. So, how to proceed? Well, the policy development process, the PDP, basically started today by posting the first draft of the proposal, and that's to generate discussion. Hopefully the discussion can converge sometime in the next month. next step for this PDP. Keeps reminding me of a computer, but that's
yeah. Is it an 8 or an 11?
Yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, this computer hopefully will then produce a detailed proposal which goes into the next step. That's basically a proposal that says do this, and that will go for review and last call, and the whole thing should take about take something like 2 months, which means that you can start working on this sort of January of next year. And since the getting an idea of the issues and the proof of concept work is something you can finish before RIPE 52, and at RIPE 52 this working group can then discuss the results, see if this is what they want and if this is something that should be supported by the RIPE NCC. And yeah, basically that's all I wanted to say on this. The question is, has anybody read this proposal? Are there already comments on it? If not, I would encourage people to read the document. It's 4 pages and post to the list. But there's Dave.
I'd like to make one feature request, if I may. You mentioned that the performance between an end user and a remote ISP can be measured by measuring the performance between the end user and the local ISP's test box added to the measurements for the local ISP's test box to the remote one. I wonder, could we test that assumption by also performing at least a few measurements to a second test box?
Good point.
Yeah, I was going to say that the other thing is actually, if you look at Alex's proposal, what makes this difficult for the RIPE NCC to do is actually the test box at the local ISP, because if you I'm not taking this position, but it's fairly easy to take the position that if you want to make measurements about customer to something inside the ISP. That's something Alex should go and sell to the ISPs rather than to the RIPE NCC, because it's outside the charter of the RIPE NCC. If you think about what the RIPE NCC should be doing, so it might be a good idea to actually look at this proposal and just do away with this assumption at all, and make this a little bit more inter-provider in order to avoid this argument. But not many people have read the thing. Let's take it to the list.
We'll notice and we'll make sure Alex sees it. Or I think you already mailed it to him. So
it's me again, Andrei Rybacheski, RIPE NCC. Well, I second Daniel's concerns. And moreover, when I read the proposal, one thing I really missed is that who would really benefit from this extension of TTM service? And that was not that clear to me.
Would you like to answer?
Yeah.
Well,
I see
a couple of benefits. Yeah. It's more in the sense of deploying general measurement infrastructure. What people hit me up, I get hit up a lot about DNS-MON, just because people sort of tend to see me in DNS-MON. And one of the criticisms is not enough probes, and also not realistic probes. We have also seen on Monday, I believe, May's presentation about BGP stuff that you can only see if you have your probes at multi-home customers and things like that. So there's definitely a demand for more data. Yeah. So beneficiaries in this sense would be name server operators. It would be people operating BGP in multi-home scenarios and things like that. I'm quite sure that in the sort of more academic scientific community, there's lots of sinks for data like this. The question is there also something that's interesting for the operators?
Yeah, though.
And that's something I see a couple of immediate uses, but it just needs to be clarified which ones we want to attack.
Yeah.
So I think there is use for this. It's significantly different than what TTM tried to do. And I heard only the tail end of the previous presentation when there was a call for standardized interfaces and things like that. That's something that could also go into this thing. It's quite clear to me, sort of from very high up, 10 kilometers up, that the demand for hard data to make operational decisions is increasing. The only question is a local optimization. Should the NCC be providing this data in which circumstances? So it's more a general, feeling. Yes, we need more data, and the tactical thing will come after that.
Yeah, if I can respond to that, I think that one of the things is on this slide. I mean, there are the group of people who sort of wrote this proposal. I mean, Alex typed it in, but he consulted with four large providers, which each are in the order of hundred thousands of end-home users. So there seems to be some interest. And the other comment is that, but that would be an NCC angle. There seems to be interest in having a standard tool available on the shelf, even if that people can just pick up and use. Marco.
To clarify my position, I wasn't implying that there is no benefit in this proposal. Don't take me wrong. I just said that if we look at real beneficiaries of this extension, that could give us a better picture if RIPE and CC should do this or not.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, first of all, I second Daniel on the fact that there is small risk that this might get a bit commercial. People actually putting test boxes in their network to prove that they're better as the other one. And the second concern is, as Daniel commented, like people are complaining about not enough probes. This might get out of hand. For instance, if we have a large ISP of 100,000 who decide, like, okay, let's sponsor 5,000 test boxes, there's an awful lot of data coming from that one ISP.
If you find me that ISP, I'll do the startup.
Oh, that's easy. Done.
Depends on the cost of the end user device.
But the point is the hard question. The hard problem is not the small boxes. Many people, Luca Deri is doing that, Ricard is doing that. I played with it at my home. I mean, the hard part is collecting the data, just like you say. It's collecting data and making sense of it, which is the hard part. And then, okay, one more thing. Of course, what the RIPE NCC does provide is a neutral neutral space. So if you definitely we have an advantage in saying, okay, if we collect something and we have operational control over the collection process, people will trust the data more than they would trust the data if they were just collected by Joe Random, and especially if they're collected by the ISPs themselves. So there is some advantage here, definitely. It needs to be worked on.
Yeah, and the other thing, I'm admitting I haven't read the proposal yet, but are there any provisionings made for things like people deploying a quality of service towards the end customer, and what you do with that? Because you could get various different data if somebody suddenly decides to put it in a high priority queue compared to somebody else who treats it as regular traffic. Might be useful to somewhere in the process define that the probe traffic should be handled in a certain manner, like put it in the same priority groups as your HTTP traffic, or put it in.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, Richard Dawson here again. I think the problem is we have a scope. We have one side. We have putting measurement boxes at every internet user in the universe, and on the other side we have something I think more or less what we have today in the test traffic project. We have to figure out the scope. is it interesting to put that test box in the homeowner? Because then we will get data like I showed you, because people are actually file sharing. That's not any news. And you will get round trip times of 700 milliseconds when you do file sharing. And so we need to figure out if we, my understanding of this product is that we're building a generic infrastructure, generic model for doing these kind of measurements. And how you use it is depending on the situation. If you want to do a small trial, like the last presentation, or if you want to do a large measurement in the network, or if you want to do be part of doing measurements on the internet, everything has to be okay, has to be part of the project. The only thing that I feel is the primary goal here is to make a generic measurement system, something that everybody can use for whatever purpose they like.
Okay. If there are no more comments, we'll make sure that these comments are relayed to Alex, and any comments on the list, please. And we hope to see a lively discussion there. And yeah, things like scope and what should go in there are absolutely important. Okay, then the last item, gathering, is not here. Okay, this is another discussion that got started on the mailing list. Gathering. Okay. I sent him a mail. Well, actually, I sent him a mail. Do you want to say something about your own proposal? Okay, while we're waiting for this. Okay, while we're waiting for this, are there any other business people want to bring up? We'll keep. No? Okay.
Yeah, it's totally separate, and I'm talking as a consultant to one of the CCT leads here, Essie, and we're interested in having more deployment of measurement points. Like Dennis said, for DNS mode, and that's the primary interest. We're not interested in the test traffic project or any data from that project. We're primarily interested in getting more coverage from for the DNS mode project. And could this project output some kind of generic measurement points that you can send to, for example, an internet provider in Africa that they can put up to get accurate DNS mon data? That's totally separate from this project.
Yeah. Good question. Well,
it's just a proposal. Think about it.
That's something I have to look at, but I'll make sure that one thing you could do is make a suite that just runs DNS mon on a generic box. You don't need the NTP for that, and then all you would need is essentially a shell account by whoever is interested in running this.
Yeah, just to understand the question, we're asking for like a do-it-yourself kit, so you can install DNS-1 probing and central collecting software, or you were asking for your own probe that can be part of the whole system?
Well, we are actually buying the service, or at least the CCT is buying the service from Rive, so we're interested in, if you look at the map, there is no measurement points in Africa or South America like that. So we're interested in getting that coverage. And if we can build that in some way other than actually putting a test traffic box with the GPS receiver and all that equipment there, it would be great. Because I think the possibility of sponsoring such an effort of actually sending the hardware out. So if you can build a solution that's simpler and more focused to DNS mode.
I think that makes sense. The only thing that I would caution against is the do-it-yourself kit. I think there's some big advantage in controlling the measurement and the circumstances of the measurements, even for something as simple as DNSMon. So, but I mean, you can do it on one of these small boxes.
Yeah, I mean, you can essentially do it on anything.
Yeah, I have a running prototype. The only problem is that it's a parallel development and collecting the data is the problem. But yeah, definitely, it's something that we should put on the list.
Yeah, well,
the question is where it ends up on the list. Yeah. More people should demand this.
Yeah.
Okay, but can it be separate from the customer proposal that we can maybe
do? Absolutely. I mean,
because it's something that I see is interesting in the near future, and it's pretty easy to solve, and I'm willing to put some effort into that.
Yeah, we should probably treat it as two different items.
Okay,
then Hertz.
Thanks for bringing this up, and thanks to Daniel for actually notifying me. I was over there in IPv6, and I sent this to the list and assumed that this would be sufficient, but I'm taking the chance to present my idea. We are currently running a multicast capable network, and both our upstream providers claim to be multicast capable and all the things that should tell me that somebody out in the world is using multicast, like places all over the world, show me and nobody else. And I assume that's mostly due to there being black holes somewhere in between. And since there is not yet enough, maybe never will be, commercial interest in multicast, that people are just not noticing it fast enough when they do changes, to actually know, oh, this change I just did killed multicast, so let's fix it right away instead of waiting for 3 weeks for an hotline call to come in. To diagnose multicast problems, you need lots of measuring points, sending packets to multicast groups and looking at all other measurement points whether packets actually are coming in. And, well, we have a very nice network of boxes all over the world that send packets and look at packets coming in. And I thought, well, it might be an idea to use the test boxes for multicast, pinging, sort of like having a well-known multicast distribution group, all the boxes sending beacon packets to the group in well-defined intervals, and all other box monitoring which percentage of the packets come in, and then actually using that data to plot where in the network the black holes are hiding. The theory is that every beacon packet from every multicast enabled box should reach every other box, but there are always certain paths where, say, PIM misconfiguration happened or whatever, so that things that are part of the same multicast network still don't see each other, but they might see a third one over a different set of lines, so that might be actually ease tracking down where the problem is. If it's only us that are interested in that, this is certainly not something RIPE should pay money for in research and developing and everything, but if you all think this is a good thing, maybe it should be a RIPE project. Please discuss.
That implies that all test boxes are, if we're on majority of test boxes, that it was multicast enabled.
It boils down to figuring out that whether we have, of the 130 boxes or so, only 5 of them are running in multicast capable networks, or 100. So if it's only 5 of them, it doesn't make too much sense. If it's maybe, say, 50.
Obviously, the first step would be to find out how much coverage we have. So
yeah.
That's something we. Unless there's a position in the working group, we could put on our list and basically say just ask test box source and see whether we could enable multicast there.
that would be a good start here. As of today, the router where TestBox 12 is connected to, that's our box, is not multicast enabled, but I can just easily switch it on. It's just off because one of the rules I remember was don't do anything weird on that network that might interfere with the measurement.
So we should go out and ask all the TestBox hosts whether they can do that.
On the mailing, I've sent out a proposal to the mailing list on Monday and got some sidetrack discussion on whether multicast exists, but no actual feedback on whether if we want to do this, then doing it on the test box would be a good idea or not, but maybe something more will come. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, if there's nothing else, thank you all for attending. Hope to see you on the mailing list.
What's all that nonsense with that patch that
we all knew about?
Yeah. Why don't you go and